Welcome to The Freedom Line, the podcast for the Center for Individual Freedom, where we meet nonsense with common sense. Here's your host, Renee Giacchino.
Thank you for tuning into the Freedom Cast. My name is Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. Joining me now is Nathan Lewis. Nathan is among the world's leading authorities on monetary policy and economic history. He is the author of The Magic Formula, The Timeless Secret to Economic Health and Prosperity, another book titled Gold, The Once and Future Money, and then Gold, The Money Polaris, and Gold, The Final Standard. A Discovery Institute Fellow, his writings have appeared in Forbes, the Financial Times, and elsewhere. He joins us today to talk about his latest book titled Inflation, What It Is, Why It's Bad, and How to Fix It. He co-authored this book with Steve Forbes and Elizabeth Ames. Nathan, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Well, there could not be a more timely book or discussion. Thank you so much for joining me. And probably one of the first questions you typically get is, where did you buy your crystal ball that this book is so timely?
Well, like I think a number of people, we saw central banks getting very busy in 2020. Basically, what happened in the United States in 2020 is that the federal government ran a deficit of over 15% of GDP, which is the highest outside of World War II. And much of this was essentially financed by the Federal Reserve money creation. So the Federal Reserve actually created about $3 trillion that didn't exist before. And that's how, in an indirect way, the bills were paid. And there was actually some justification for that. The inflationary effects were not all that great, but we definitely did not saw a pattern forming up. We didn't want America or the world to go down this path much longer. We knew there was going to be consequences. And so it was, in the end, a pretty easy call.
So the book details in plain speak, you know, why inflation happens, why it is bad for the economy and society. And again, I applaud you in covering such a difficult topic and doing it, you know, so that folks like me with essentially a third grade level math. I mean, I'm a lawyer. That's why I'm, you know, didn't go into the sciences, but I could understand what was going on. But let's just start with a simple question. You know, in chapter one, you spell out what is inflation. Define for us how you would as concisely as you can, what inflation is. And I found it quite interesting that it's not just, you know, there are actually two types of inflation, as you talk about, non-monetary and monetary.
Yes, we decided from the outset we had to kind of clarify and separate things a little bit. Unfortunately, this term inflation, it kind of arises from popular speech. It has something to do with rising prices. And it's just become this, you know, stew pot where all kinds of things are thrown in. And this is just as bad at the sort of expert level, you know, professional economist level, as it is in newspapers and popular speech. But we thought that the average American could understand this pretty easily. And so we wanted to start by separating things that are called inflation into two basic categories. One is all kinds of supply-demand issues. And we kind of understand that. We know that there have been supply chain issues and tight labor markets and maybe tight housing markets, and all these supply and demand things may drive up prices. And that's real, and that's happening, and that is accounting for some of what's going on. Well, about half, I would say. And then there's a whole other sphere of influences, which is basically not supply and demand. That's not an issue. It's basically just central bank policy and the consequences of that policy. And it's really easy to understand. We have floating fiat currencies. Our currencies are not stable in value. No one promises that they are. And if they go up and down in value, and the long-term trend has been for these currencies to decline in value intermittently, and we just had one of those declines, the dollar today is worth less than it was worth in 2018. And that has consequences. It's really easy to imagine if your money is not worth as much, then over time, months and years, markets adjust and prices rise as a consequence.
So why can't we just print more money?
Well, we do have to, you know, the money has to come from somewhere. So to some degree, we can print money and, you know, get away with it, satisfy the demand that people have for not just people, but especially banks, have for having, you know, some kind of transactional mechanism. So the question is, you know, how much is too much? How much is enough and how much is too much? And the central bank is charged with this role. And basically, the answer is, the simple answer is, we don't want the currency to decline in value. If the currency declines in value, then you've had too much. And unfortunately, our central banks have over time, in this floating fiat currency environment, in this, you know, politicized money that we have today and didn't have in the past, they always tend to err time from time to time on the side of a little too much, and the currency declines in value.
So how is it that these higher prices, the effect that they have on inflation? You said that's not the cause of inflation, actually, though. Is that right?
Right. We have to think about causes, because then we can think about solutions, right? If you can't figure out the cause, you can't figure out the solution. And this is kind of the state of public discourse and public policy these days. So there's all this, we said, non-monetary stuff, supply and demand stuff, and we kind of understand the cause and we kind of understand the solution. If housing prices in Florida are going up because a lot of people live there and they haven't built any houses yet, well, you know, go build some houses. Figured that out. Mm-hmm. And then there's the monetary side. And it's real simple. The cause of rising prices from a monetary perspective is a decline in the value of the currency. And this sounds kind of abstract. What does that mean? But it's real obvious when it happens to somebody else. And we use the example in the book of Mexican peso. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, you go to Cancun for vacation, and if you went in the early 90s, you would have got about 3 pesos for your dollar, right? You go to your favorite bar, and your $5 beer costs 15 pesos. Well, you go there today, and you walk to the airport, and you get 20 pesos for your dollar, and you go to your bar, and your $5 beer now costs 100 pesos. Well, price went from 15 pesos to 100 pesos. And the reason is obvious to everybody, because this peso is not worth as much. And mm-hmm. Mexico has a floating fiat currency that, you know, there was a central bank guy who makes stuff up as it goes along. And the long-term result has been a declining Mexican peso value compared to the dollar. But we have the same thing. We also have a floating fiat currency. We also have a guy that makes it up as he goes along. And our currency has declined also during that time. It's not worth as much, and that's why prices are higher.
We are talking with Nathan Lewis. He is the co-author of a recent book. It's titled Inflation: What It Is, Why It's Bad, and How to Fix It. The book is put out by Encounter Books. So how does raising interest rates affect or reduce inflation? We hear all this discussion going on about, you know, the rise in interest rates, the need to rise interest rates to help combat inflation. How does that work, Nathan? And does it?
That's a very good question. And I wish economists and central bankers would ask themselves that question. Because what is the relationship exactly? Didn't we just explain that monetary inflation is caused by a decline in currency value? What's the relationship? Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is there isn't much of a relationship. it's kind of you know, very chaotic and vague. We have floating fiat currencies today. We don't have the gold standard system that we had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically people wanted to manipulate interest rates and other things, but that was a biggie because they thought that they could, you know, sort of influence the macroeconomic environment by jiggering interest rates. And that's true. They can't do that. But if they kind of overdo it, then you get, you know, the decline in currency value reaches a politically uncomfortable state. So there's all this talk about interest rates. Unfortunately, you know, try to simplify this discussion a little bit. We got to the point now where we've completely forgotten about the real, not completely forgotten, but the real point of focus has kind of left us, which is the value of the currency. It doesn't really have much to do with interest rates. And we also forget that, you know, we don't have to manipulate interest rates. We could just let the free market do it. And then we could just worry about the value of the currency and forget about it. You know, Wall Street guys, they can figure out a price to trade 91-day treasury paper between each other, right? They can figure out mm-hmm. the price on a loan. They don't need the central bank's help. And that is actually this willingness to give up this interest rate manipulation is a core element in getting back to the monetary framework that the United States actually used for almost 200 years up until 1971, which is to stabilize the value of the currency as much as possible, which in practical terms means gold standard system.
Right. So in Chapter 4, you make the case that inflation can be stopped actually surprisingly quickly if it's properly understood. So number one, we need to get this book to everyone at the Federal Reserve so they will understand this issue better. Number two, I think you just alluded to this. How would a return to gold-based money impact inflation instead of it being based on, you know, as you've talked about, the value of the currency?
Right. Technically, how do you stop inflation? And I'm going to focus only on this monetary kind of inflation. Well, if we just explained it as a decline in currency value, then at the very least, keep it from declining any further. If you're in Mexico and you're at 20 to the dollar, like, don't go to 40 or 50 or 100, right? Stop at 20. And maybe, you know, sometimes you can justify a little rise, go from 20 to 15 or something like that. It gets a little problematic when you do that, but maybe. So that's how you do it. And if you look at, you know, newspapers and talking heads and, you know, economist eggheads, they all talk about all this other stuff. Oh, we have to have this kind of interest rates and we have to have this kind of inflation expectations. And it's not my fault is basically what they say. And it takes years and years. And no, it doesn't. Let me give you an example. Many people are aware that there was a hyperinflation in Germany in the early 1920s, and you had, you know, like billion mark banknotes and all this stuff. But people don't really understand how it ended, and they finally decided, okay, enough is enough. Can't do this anymore. And they got some guy who was the right man for the job. Hjalmar Schacht was his name, and he set up an office in a former cleaning closet at the Ministry of Finance, and he had a secretary with his entire staff. And he said, okay, forget about that. We're going to relink the mark to gold. Of course, that was normal for Germany. And on Monday, they had hyperinflation. On Friday, it was done. Mark was back on the gold standard. So one guy and a secretary did it in 5 working days. So, you know, you have all this stuff. Oh, it's so hard, it's so difficult. No, it's not. You just have to make the decision.
Well, and again, you know, in Chapter 4, I think, excuse me, but you explore, I mean, you dissect looking at even Ludwig Erhard's triumph over Germany's post-World War II inflation. I mean, this week marked the 77th anniversary of World War II's end in Europe. You know, let's look there as well. Look at, as you talk about, the Detroit banker Joseph Dodge, who had a similar victory in post-war Japan. Paul Volcker beating stagflation in the 70s. I mean, they say history repeats itself, but boy, have we got amnesia? Can't we learn from these experiences?
Yeah, the experience of Germany and Japan after World War II is pretty interesting because they were under U.S. Military occupation, of course, and they had hyperinflation, both countries. And this is well after the war. You know, this is 1948. War was well over. And basically, the governments were printing money to finance themselves. And so they got this guy, Joseph Dodge, from Chicago, and he went to both Germany and Japan. And it was an interesting political process. So what he did is he said, okay, we're going to pass a law. Government can't spend money until after they receive it. They cut up all their credit cards, basically. After you get tax revenue, then you can spend it. But there's no deficits, there's no debt, there's no funny money, you know, there's no monkeying around. That's the rule. And that relieved the pressure on the central bank to print the money to finance spending. And immediately then the central bank was able politically to return to gold, in this case a U.S. dollar peg, and they did that. And the same thing happened in Japan. And Japan actually kept that no deficit spending law until 1965 when there was a recession. So, was gigantically successful, of course. So we are now getting into this situation. I think everybody knows we've been talking about it for decades, where we kind of have a lot of debt and spend and deficit spending, and there's increasing pressure on the central banks to finance it. And part of the solution in the future might be, as Joseph Dodge did, just say, okay, you're going to have to cut that out. And then we can fix the money problem.
We are talking with Nathan Lewis, the co-author of Inflation, What It Is, Why It's Bad, and How to Fix It. In Chapter 3, you liken inflation to a sugar high, and there are some economists at the Federal Reserve who even proclaim that some inflation is good. Any truth to that?
Inflation, if you just think about it as a decline in currency value, with Mexican peso going from 10 to 12 per dollar, it's pretty obvious that, you know, the decline currency makes people poorer, right? It makes their incomes worth less and their investments worth less and so forth. But unquestionably, a little bit of this distortion of the monetary environment, typically for about 18 months, can produce this sort of, it's like a sugar high, it's like a caffeine rush. And that is, in fact, how we got off the gold standard in 1971. Specifically, Richard Nixon wanted to get reelected. There was a recession in 1970, and he wanted to get reelected in 1972. And the Federal Reserve Governor, Bill Martin, his term was coming up, and he was kind of like big gold standard defender. And Nixon replaced him in January of 1970 with his good buddy, Arthur Burns, who said, look, Richard, we just got to, you know, print some money and get interest rates down, and you'll have a strong economy. You'll get reelected in 1972. And it actually all worked out exactly as Arthur Burns said. But the problem was, after 1972 came 1973, which is when the nasty inflation of the 70s really hit the headlines.
So in the book, you also write about social trust. What is social trust, and how does that play into inflation?
Yeah, we wanted to touch on the book. It's a difficult topic to get your arms around, but it's also, I think, important. And that is the corrosive effect today's floating fiat currencies have on almost everything. And like I said, before 1971, for nearly two centuries, the principle for the U.S. dollar is you knew what it was. The value of it was linked to gold in the Bretton Woods period, $35 an ounce. And so it was a pretty definite thing. And it's interesting to read some accounts from that period in the 1950s, because they actually, you know, a dollar for them really was X many grams of gold. And so it was definite. And today we live in this hall of mirrors environment where nothing is certain, nothing is reliable, nothing is trustworthy. We have some central banker guy just making stuff up as they go along. They don't really have any, and they just promise, oh, trust me, it's going to be okay, and it never really is. And as a consequence, all of our contracts with each other are affected by this. You know, you sign a contract with your employer, and he says, we're going to pay you X, but you really don't know what the value of the dollar is going to be in 5 years, and it might be very different. Or maybe not an employment contract, but an annuity or a bond or mortgage or all these long-term contracts. It's all just kind of like luck of the draw, right? Nothing is fixed. Nothing is, there's no hard promises. And over time, we sort of adopt that principle for all of our interactions. And it has a corrosive effect throughout, I would say, the entire society.
So staying on the topic of difficult things to get your head around, is there a short answer to what is the difference between inflation and stagflation?
Stagflation was a term that came up in the 1970s, and the short answer is no. Basically, it was stagflation was economists' excuse for why their broken theories didn't work, because you got to remember, they thought inflation was good, right? And then, poof, it wasn't. And so they said, well, it's not our fault. Something completely new happened, stagflation. Just look at every other country in the world. I mean, I've been involved in emerging market countries for a while, but if you're a person who travels overseas from time to time, you see this. If you ever go to a country that doesn't have a very good currency, right? You go there and the banknote's got a bunch of zeros on it. You're like, why does it take 800 of these local currency units to buy, a cup of coffee? Inevitably, they have a kind of stagnant, poor economy. And it's basically all of Latin America. and inevitably, when you get to the places where they have a pretty sound currency, that's where there tends to be long-term success, like a Thailand or a South Korea, something like that. So stagflation on the one hand is the most obvious thing in the world. You know, inflation, the declining currency value, bad for economies. Well, yeah, everybody, you should know that. But they've kind of got into this, theory, like, oh, all we have to do is jigger with the money and we could fix things. And we're still dealing with the failure of that concept.
We are talking with Nathan Lewis, the author of Inflation, What It Is, Why It's Bad, and How to Fix It. I believe they've made the case in the book. We've had a great discussion today about why everyone at the Central, why our leading economists, why folks at the Federal Reserve need to read this book. I think everybody needs to read this book. Chapter 5, fascinating. What about your money? They include in their guidelines to investing during these inflationary times, examining the pros and cons of a full range of options. You know, everything from commodities and treasury inflation protected securities, TIPS, something I'd never heard of, to alternative investments like cryptocurrencies. And then in chapter 6, they take us some key takeaways with our way forward. Speaking of a way forward, before I let you go, the Fed's had a pivotal monetary policy meeting last week. Is there any good news to come from that, Nathan?
Let me say that although I think we had a substantial dollar decline around 2020, and we're now experiencing the effects of it, the Fed kind of realized they made an error, and they've taken some steps to keep things from getting worse. I think the dollar's value has actually been pretty stable over let's say 2021 and 2022 so far. So I think we can respect that the Fed is trying not to have things get out of hand. The problem I see, but this is a pretty common cycle throughout this entire floating fiat era that we've had since 1971. Yeah, central banks sometimes get serious. And then what happens? Well, basically, a recession happens. And they're already talking about this. And we saw what happened in the last recession. We saw what happened in 2020 during COVID and before that in 2009 and so forth. Congress is now in this real bad habit where they think, oh, it's a recession. It's party time. We have a great justification to just spend idiotic amounts of money, right? 10% of GDP, 15% of GDP. And we all know why politicians love to do that. But the consequences of that and the outcome of that in recent days or recent years has been a lot of pressure on the central bank to basically finance this spending with some sort of money creation or whatever it might be, to keep interest rates from rising as a result of all this debt issuance and some related thing. And it's easy to imagine where, and I think people and market participants understand this, where the next round we might do this money printing thing again, and it might come out very badly.
Well, it's very interesting to really realize the impact that inflation is having on politics, on our government. And you know, you do, as I say, as we started this discussion today, detailing it in plain speak for us. Our guest has been Nathan Lewis. He co-authored with Steve Forbes and Elizabeth Ames the hotly released book, Inflation, What It Is, Why It's Bad, and How to Fix It. Nathan, any parting words?
Yes. There's one thing I want to remind Americans is this is not the way we used to do things. We had almost 200 years on the gold standard, almost two centuries on the gold standard system. And what happened? We became the wealthiest country in the history of the world. Turns out when you don't have chronic currency depreciation, good things happen. We sort of understand this. Going forward, central bankers always talk a big talk, but we know what the long-term outcome of their actions is. I estimate the dollar today is worth about 1/50th of what it was worth in the 1960s. The gold standard system is the only system in history that has been able to discipline this funny money, floating fiat currency error. It's the only thing that works, put it that way.
Well, hopefully, folks who read this book will encourage anyone who has the ability to make that change. It sounded like it started with President Nixon when we shifted off of the gold standard. Move it back to where it was, and let's see if we can turn this situation around sooner rather than later and not end up like a Mexico or a Venezuela or, as you mentioned, many of the countries in Latin America. We have abused your time, but we greatly appreciate it. Nathan, thank you again for your time today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking with Nathan Lewis, co-author with Steve Forbes and Elizabeth Ames of the book It's Bad and How to Fix It, put out by Encounter Books. Check it out, easy to get through Amazon or through your favorite bookstore. Again, the book is titled Inflation, What It Is, Why It's Bad, and How to Fix It. Nathan, have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.